Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hopp, and today's subject is indoor health and mold toxicity. We're talking to an expert. He's Steve Levy. Steve Levy is the founder and president of Certified Mold Inspections, or CMI. I guess, Steve, this is a good time to maybe give out some information about CMI. If people need a consultation, how do they find you?
Two ways. One, they can call us directly at 732-757-7455. That's my personal cell phone number, but they can also go right directly to our office, which is 732-203-0885. And then, of course, our website.
Yeah, we have a national audience. So this is you confine your inspections to the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, or do you have a more national outreach?
We do. We do have a natural outreach. We have associates in California, down in Florida.
Okay, good.
We reach out to many, many people throughout the entire country.
Okay.
But the one other way to get a hold of us is just go to our website, which is www.findingthemold.com. And there is an 800 number that people can source to reach us on
Great.
The site.
Okay, so let's take a look at what happens when you actually do an inspection. Take us through an actual inspection, and then presuming that you find some sources of mold, what are some steps towards remediation?
Well, the inspection is a really, really important part of the whole process, and the visual assessment actually is the number one thing that needs to really, really be taken into consideration. There are a lot of companies out there that just go in and take random samples and from there come up with their assessment as to what may be going on or not going on in the home. And you know, many times that can give people a false sense of security. So what we do is go in and do a very thorough visual assessment. We employ a wealth of tools and technology, everything from infrared cameras, moisture meters. And what we're
How do the infrared cameras figure in? In other words, if there's mold present, it might light up. It might actually have a signature on infrared.
Well, mold is as I mentioned earlier, nothing more than a symptom of a much bigger problem, that being water and moisture intrusion.
Okay.
So what we're looking for are signs of either past or present water intrusion. And to do that, we use tools like an infrared camera, which mm-hmm. is a really good device that we scan around all the windows, the ceilings, the doors, the walls. What we're looking for essentially is cold spots, because when the building material, especially walls and ceiling, get wet, they're going to have a different temperature.
And so this won't be visually apparent. In other words, say in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, you know, it's gone, it's done, it's over. The walls seem to be dry, but they're actually not. There's actually a physical property that may be conducive to mold growth.
That's right. That's exactly right. In fact, what we find many times is all building materials have what's considered to be a normal moisture content range. And depending on the building material, generally you want to have the building materials anywhere between 8 to 12%. That's generally the dry standard. Many times you can have colonization of mold when you can have as little water activity as 17-18%, and with the naked eye in the field, you're not going to pick that up. Mm-hmm. So the moisture meter is a really, really good device to identify hidden moisture that many times with that naked eye and feel is very, very difficult to detect. So we're going to go through and we're going to look for those kinds of areas. And you know what's really very, very important, we look for the most subtlest signs of either past or present water intrusion, because we recognize that even a small piece of rust, dot of staining may represent just the tip of the iceberg that could really unfold a mold situation that's harboring within a wall or ceiling cavity that you wouldn't even realize.
So short of tearing out walls, how do you know that there might be mold behind a wall?
Well, using those tools, those technologies, and one of the things that's really key is to look for those symptoms or those visual signs that will show that there was some kind of water intrusion. If you're seeing any staining, any rusting, any suspect growth, many times that may indicate that there is some mold harboring behind the ceiling or the wall cavity. And we're looking in every area that we can possibly have access to, basements, crawl spaces, attics. We're even looking at, Doctor, inside the toilet tanks. This is an area yep. that we find to be very consistent. When you lift the top of the toilet tank, many homes that are compromised with a mold problem, you'll find mold inside the toilet tank. And the reason that is, molds are going to grow where there's moisture. And when there's a source, generally speaking, molds are going to grow the most predominant. So what we find, when people see that there's mold in their bathrooms, a lot of times they're thinking, well, maybe I have the mold source here. Generally speaking, when you start to see mold growing in a bathroom, because predominantly you're bathing, you're showering, you're creating those right mm-hmm. moist conditions.
Yeah, where the grout gets very, grimy
right.
looking.
That, exactly. That may indicate that there's a source somewhere else in the house. And the reason why it's showing up there is because the conditions are suitable.
Hmm. Okay. So it's just it's floating around looking for a place to find a happy home. And because of the moisture content, the bathroom may be a likely repository. But it's got to come from somewhere, and it may be coming from an indoor source somewhere else in the house. How about refrigerators? From what I understand, nobody looks under the refrigerator. All kinds of debris accumulates there, and that can be a problem spot too.
Yes, the refrigerator is a reservoir. It's a really, really big reservoir because you've got the fan that's cooling the motor, so it's pulling the air in. So you also have underneath the many refrigerators, you have a drain pan that many times is not draining properly and can be a reservoir for not only mold but bacteria. And you get that situation that can produce not just the mycotoxins, but the endotoxins, which is, another contaminant to be concerned about. And so we look in all those areas. One of the most important areas that we talked about earlier was the ventilation system, the forced air heating and air conditioning system, where we find notoriously is a trap and an area where a lot of spores get harbored and perpetually distributed throughout the home. And those are areas that as you get in and look inside the returns, inside the duct systems, you start to see an ecology that is really not one that you're paying attention to because no one ever looks there.
Right.
They're not paying attention to it.
And a lot of people, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and so that a lot of times becomes a source that people don't realize is really impacting the indoor air quality.
And a lot of people these days use humidifiers because, the average New York apartment is drier than the Sahara Desert in July. And so people get dry skin, they get all kinds of respiratory problems because of the air dryness. So they try to put more moisture into the air. Are there pitfalls associated with using humidifiers?
Yeah, especially the ones that we find, the ones that are attached to the actual ventilation itself, can be really problematic. And a lot of times we find some people forget to turn off the humidifier in the summertime. So you're really over moistening the inside of the system. Those systems you want to use in the wintertime when it's a lot drier. And so, they can also be a reservoir for other contaminants as well, because a lot of times people don't really clean them very thoroughly. Mm-hmm. You not only can get mold growing in there, you can get certain bacteria. So now you've got a soup of contaminants that can be distributed through those systems as a result of it.
And after all, it's Legionnaire's disease is transmitted through air cooling towers. We know that can be a reservoir for very, yes. very serious, dangerous bacteria. Recently, that occurred in the Bronx here in New York, as you well know. And mm-hmm. I was surprised to hear that one of the classroom buildings at my alma mater, Albert Einstein College of Medicine, you'd think that would be the most safe place in the city to be. Had to be closed down because of Legionnaire's contamination.
Mm. Yeah, very, very, very common. And so it's really important that maintenance staff be really, really on top of inspecting those systems and keeping them clean. It's a really, really, really hot spot for those kinds of the contaminants to colonize.
Okay, so we've discovered mold in a household. What are some of the steps towards remediation? Do you have to, you know, tear out all the walls, you know, strip it down to the to the framing, or are there steps short of that that you're going to undertake? Do you have to pull out all the old HVAC ducting, or can it be cleaned? And does cleaning sometimes pose hazards in itself? Because if you put harsh anti-mold paint or use anti-mold substances throughout, you know, the house, you can actually get sick from that stuff.
Yeah, you can be eliminating one problem and creating another with harmful VOCs that off-gas from some of the solutions and the chemicals that you might be using. But, you know, everything is about, first of all, especially in certain states where they have licensing requirements, everything is about validating what you are seeing and suspecting. So testing is a very, very important part of the whole process. Once you go through the house and identify certain areas, very, very critical to test to make sure that what you see actually is mold. It's very important to do that, because validating or dismissing it is really what's going to help create the appropriate treatment protocol in terms of the remediation step. So once you do that, everything is about source removal. And I know that there are a lot of protocols out there that would promote doing things like baking and spraying and encapsulating, but there are no standard of care that I know of. And I'm talking about the New York Department of Health, the IRCRCS 520, the EPA. There are none that would promote anything other than what we call source removal. And many times, source removal is a drastic step. And when you're dealing with people who are sick, there is unfortunately no other method to do that than to remove it and get it out. When someone's sick, and you, doctor, would obviously agree with this, you know, you either remove the person from the environment or remove the toxin from the environment. And if you don't do either of those two, it doesn't matter what treatment protocol they're on. As we talked about earlier, exposure is always going to win out. So dead mold, you know, this is where a lot of people are misinformed. They think they can spray mold, but dead mold can be just as potentially adverse health affecting as live mold, because it still retains its allergenic properties. It still retains its toxigenic properties. And so it's all about source removal to get the spores out. And for what we find with a lot of people who are really, really compromised, drastic times, drastic measures. It's, you know, getting in and really, really doing a deep cleaning throughout the entire house to remove all the dust in reservoirs, behind kick plates, appliances. It's a very, very important step when somebody's not feeling well. And getting back to what I said before, if the systems have forced air heating and air conditioning and they're not hard ducted, the returns, those hard ducts need to be installed. And many times, depending on whether we find mycotoxins inside the system, generally speaking, you can't clean them.
Yeah, that's actually something that I've experienced, because when I bought a house and it's by the water, so it's very likely to be exposed to moisture, the whole ducting system was, I don't know what you call it, but it was soft ducts, and it was really prone to accumulation of all kinds of junk. So we had it all stripped out. Basically, they were like metallic slinky tubes. I don't know what you call those.
Oh,
things.
Yeah, the flex duct. There are two types of ducts that absolutely there's no way you can clean them. It's a flex duct,
right?
Which is very much like a slinky toy.
It's cheap. It's cheap. It's easy to install. Yeah. No biggie, but yes. No good.
But then there's little reservoirs where the spores can hide and harbor. And then the other one is fiberglass lined insulation, which is impossible to clean. And for those people who are very, very sensitive, even the steel ducts can be very, very difficult to clean because there's interstitial areas that you just can't reach. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And these mycotoxins are extremely small. When the mold spore dries out, it splinters out into very, very small submicron-sized particles that you're not going to arrest with traditional filters, mm-hmm. or even HEPA scrubbers that go down to 0.3 microns, because some of these particulates, these mycotoxins, are 1 micron, which mm-hmm. is very small, so small it can actually diffuse through building materials. So that's why source removal is a critical step in the remediation process.
And sometimes HVAC installers give you the option of putting in UV light decontamination so that there's UV light through which the airflow passes. Is that, you know, any measure of protection, or is it incomplete prevention?
I think that it's a little better than nothing, if that makes sense. You know, when you have air that's funneling through the system, and it may kill the spore, but as we talked about earlier, the spore is still, if it's dead, going to be an allergen or potentially a toxin that could influence negatively the indoor air environment. And then again, as these particulates start to really splinter out into small submicron sized particles, they're still floating around and they're not being captured. And so many people will have remediation done in their home, and many consultants would use spore trap sampling as a method of what's clean versus an outside control. And a lot of times, depending on the environment and the occupants, that may be a suitable measurement. But when it comes to somebody who has real, real sensitivities, that type of measurement may not be a suitable form of clearance.
And there have been some building scandals too, you know, poor quality building materials, in particular imported from China. I think this particularly affected the New Jersey region recently, where entire communities were built with sheetrock and building materials that were highly mold susceptible. So when buying a house or when building a house, should one insist on certain standards?
Absolutely. The sales transaction process, I think, is probably one of the most important steps that one should consider.
Do you get involved in that? Because that I would call, because ordinary inspectors may say, I'm checking the plumbing, the electric, you know, the basic foundation. But they may not be attuned to considerations like this. And so are you sometimes called in as a specialist for someone contemplating buying a house?
Many times. And here's the thing about home inspectors. It's very, very important to the whole process. They bring a real important discipline and expertise and understanding the structural integrity of the home, the appliances. But when it comes to the environmental, many times they're not environmental experts, and many of them will tell you that they're not. And so where many of them would see a very small stain or a rust, they may not look at that as being an issue, where we would look at that, and instead of minimizing or dismissing it, we'll look and connect the dots and get a little further and see what that might mean. And many times it represents just the tip of the iceberg. But what we find when we go out and do sales transactions, we find not 90, not 95% of the time, but almost 100% of the time, that there are issues with homes that are being sold. And people that hire us are people who are concerned about buying into a mold problem, because once you own the house, you own it. There is no recourse. And, you know, a lot of times the home inspector is going to look at the structural integrity of the system in terms of the HVAC ventilation system, but they're not going to look to see if it's contaminated with mold. We do. We're going to check out basements. We're going to check out crawl spaces, attics. We're going to go and really, really do a thorough assessment to see if there's problems in homes to help people understand what they may be getting themselves into.
And here's a little clinical pearl that I'll share, is that sometimes I ask patients, do you feel better on vacation? And sometimes patients say, yeah, I feel better on vacation. Or sometimes I ask patients, do you feel better during the week and worse on the weekend? The weekend is spent predominantly in the home. And I know that sometimes the effects of mold are long-lasting and may not abate during a short week or two on vacation. But sometimes people can pretty clearly tell me that when they're away from their home, you know, perhaps for an extended period of time, maybe they, you know, rent a cottage for a month in the summer, and they do better, that's a pretty good sign that there's a sick building involved, that there's a sick home environment that needs to be addressed. Am I on the right track there?
Absolutely. In fact, I've had several clients just recently who have homes down by the shore. They'll go down to their home on a weekend, and when they get there, they're not feeling well, and they're smelling a musty smell, and they're leaving the home with clothes that they've got stored there, and people will say to them, generally their family members, wow, your clothes smell musty. And you know, a lot of times what will happen is when people are in the environment for long periods of time, there's something called acclimation. They get
yes.
acclimated to it,
right.
And so they're not aware of the musty smell, and it's not until they, like you mentioned, go away for a week or two and come back and it hits them, it's like, whoa, that there's something going on here. But that's exactly right.
And for owners of homes that have been affected by floods, you know, I think I want to emphasize that message, which is that, you know, simply painting over an area that's been flooded, you know, say you've had, you know, a couple of feet of water in your garage, and you can see a water line in the sheetrock. That sheetrock's got to come out, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, so here's the thing that a lot of people need to be aware of. And that is that anything that's porous, semi-porous, or absorbent has to be removed and discarded. Mm-hmm. And anything that's semi-porous or non-porous can be cleaned with kinds of antimicrobials. What really is very, very important also to stress is that we talked a lot about why molds produce these mycotoxins. They produce it when they're stressed. And not only are they going to be stressed when they are competing in the environment with other molds, but they're going to become stressed when they think their colonies are being attacked and killed. So when you're putting, if you're not removing the mold and you're putting some kind of bleach on a colony and you're painting over it, what you've just created was a scenario where the mold is thinking it's being attacked and could be, as a result, producing mycotoxins and diffusing it into the air, and wow. You're just painting over it, and you've got a source that you didn't even realize was a problem. And bleach, by the way, is the worst thing to use, because it's there have been some white papers and studies that show that it actually can create a change in the molecular structure of the molecule of a mold toxin and actually magnify its effects. So in addition to the fact that it's just not something you want to use because it's corrosive and it can cause other problems down the road.
And I'll conclude our discussion with a Bible quote. And it depends on which version of the Bible you're looking at, whether it's you know, the King James Version. But it says in the New Living Translation of the Bible, it says, "But if the mildew reappears after all the stones have been replaced and the house has been scraped and replastered, you should actually burn down the house if it's that bad." So that's in, I think they recognize this in Leviticus, which probably mm-hmm. has its origins 5,000 years ago, that this is pretty bad stuff. You know, instead of having you come, they used to invite a priest to come in and do an inspection. But if it was really defiled by mold, they said, abandon it.
There's many, many properties that the depth of it is such that it can be a big, big challenge to completely remediate. And even when someone's sick, you know, generally you've got 70% of the population who can live environments and if it's properly cleaned, have no ill effects. But there is a growing segment of the population that has really, really strong sensitivities to mold. And, you know, depending on the toxic load in their body, it is really critical that it's clean to a point where at least the environment is within a normal ecology so that it can become the safe haven they need it to be so that the treatment protocol they're on can effectively methylate a lot of these toxins out of the body.
All right. So in conclusion, what's our intelligent medicine call to action for today? You actually have produced a film on the subject of finding mold in your home. Can you tell our listeners how to access that?
It's quite a few years old, but you can get that from our website. If you go to our website, again, www.findingthemold.com, we have it in paper form. And also, you know, the tip of the day is that if you have any kind of water intrusion, it's something that you don't want to neglect. You want to try to dry it out as quickly as possible. Mold can grow literally within 24 to 48 hours, and the quicker that you can arrest any kind of water and moisture, the better, more you can feel comfortable that it won't colonize into a huge mold problem.
Okay, well, look, this is a very, very important contribution to our portfolio of stories about how to optimize your health. It's not just about a healthy diet, vitamins, and exercise. There are many aspects to maintaining and health and reversing disease, and you've contributed a very important dimension to that. So I want to thank you very much, Steve Levy. Once again, the website for Steve is, can you give it to us again, please?
Sure, www.findingthemold.com, and thank you so much for having me as a guest tonight. It's I'm very grateful and appreciative to the opportunity to be on your show.
It's my great pleasure. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.